Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. On our show today with Lindsay Davis, we explore the very core of human existence. I think we can sum it up best with the words of psychologist Phil Sutherland, who said, "As human beings, before we are anything else, we are a burning ball of desire." Lindsay and I probe the role of burning desire in every single move we make. We are desire. Without desire, we really are barely more than automatons. But with desire, we are hungry, we are fruitful, and we can find extraordinary pleasure and productivity in life. And why should our lives not be pleasurable and productive? Let's find out in my conversation with business, life, and performance coach, Lindsay Davis. Lindsay Davis, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. It's good to be here talking with you again. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I always enjoy our conversations so much. You know, Lindsay, from our many phone conversations, I'm going to guess that you are a brilliant business and life coach because you always impress me with unique insights and perspective. Never fails.
Well, you know, it's only as good as the conversation you're having. So you bring it out of me, and I think together we get into some pretty fun topics. So
we do
appreciate talking with you.
I think we should have recorded our phone call. That was the podcast.
Yeah, I think we just need to start pressing record.
Yeah. I think we are woven from the same cloth or the same, I guess that's the way you would say it, isn't it? Woven from the same cloth or woven into the same cloth. Mm-hmm. Our view of life is very similar.
Yeah, I agree.
So Lindsay, today, you know what I want to talk about? I'm really into this idea of desire, just as a comment and as a content, and personally, I'm into desire myself. Like, I had a guest, I think it was last week, Jamie Lerner, and she called herself a pleasure junkie. I can relate to that. It's not that looking only for pleasure and having fun and being, you know, crazy and wild, but I find enjoyment from so many different things in life, and I personally have lots of desires. Sometimes they are people desires, mission desires, and sometimes just pretty selfish, taking care of myself desires. Do you have things like that as well?
I do, and I actually love the word that you chose, which is enjoy it. Desire and enjoyment and pleasure can be really misunderstood as just superficial hedonism. But I think really, like, who are we without desire? Who are we without enjoyment or sparks of joy? I don't know where that leaves us except in, you know, shades of gray, no pun intended.
Yeah, and even that's a debatable joy. You know,
you could
really talk about that. You know, I once had a psychologist tell me, and this has been, you know, one of those things that have lasted several years in my life and guided much of my thinking. And I had a psychologist tell me that we are born a ball of desire, that's what, you know, infants have desires. And we grow up with desires, and those desires somehow get squashed because of social constructs and parental constructs, and we lose our personal desires and start playing by outside desires. But this psychologist said we're born a ball of burning desire, and that desire drives so much of who we are and what we do, and I personally really resonate with that. Is that something that you feel in your life as well?
Yeah, I love that phrase. I'm going to have to write that one down, a burning ball of desire. It reminds me, I was contemplating actually the topic of desire, and it reminds me of having like an energetic metabolism. We like put it in the metaphor with like an appetite. You know, if a human doesn't have any appetite to speak with about, we don't consider that a healthy human. And there is something about having this desire hunger. And I think a burning ball is a great phrase for that. But it, to me, indicates healthy humans. And I think you're right. I think a lot of times we are shaped and conditioned either the way we grew up or the culture or the context that we find ourselves in as adults, told what we should desire, what we should be hungry for, and we become really disconnected from our energetic appetite. And we just start going through these rote motions. And, you know, I would question, just like in a physical body, just like that in the inner, the energetic body, like how healthy of a human, how healthy of an organism is that so disconnected from their own desire?
It makes perfect sense to me that we have this. I like the energy idea, because energy certainly comes with desire. And we don't have energy around things that we don't desire. So much of our childhood is spent almost disengaging us from our desire and poo-pooing our desire and say, those are things of childhood. You can't think that. This is... And we start getting bombarded with social expectations and parental expectations. And, you know, God bless parents. I'm one myself. But we can tend to have what we think we would have wanted or we would have needed. And we put that sort of conformity or those sorts of ideas on our children. And they're not always consistent with the way our children are constructed, or, you know, the biology and psychology, emotionality and history of experience of a child could lead them to very, very, very different desires from what we have. And yet they feel guilty, can feel guilty for desiring that desire.
Yeah. And, you know, it sort of goes to the way, I know there's been a shift in psychology, but really the understanding that we used to have is that humans were static, that we're static in what we desire, who we are, how we think, when in truth, we're really verbs, we're very dynamic. And so even having, I think, that self-permission to evolve and desire different things, and maybe what fit you or how you would have defined yourself or how people saw you at one point no longer fits, and really giving yourself permission to explore and have curiosity and energy about other things. I think that's a huge permission that we have available as people. And I wish that we were reminded of that more.
You know, you use two big words in my vocabulary, curiosity and explore.
Mm.
Those are essential traits for me personally, is that I'm a very curious person. I'm always ready to, it seems like I'm constantly ready to be told, not so much that I'm wrong, but that I have incomplete data, that I don't understand the situation. When I understand the situation better, my expectations and my desires are somewhat altered, but they are consistent with me, yet it leaves a realm of egocentricity and into the realm of operating in a worldview.
Mm-hmm.
If that made any sense whatsoever after I said it, I said, huh?
It did. You used some big words for me, Charlie, but I like it. I follow you. So I'll say it like this. And I see this quite a bit. When many times I start with somebody, they've been so disconnected from what, you know, that egocentric, like they've either been told their desires are wrong, they've been told how they should be, or kind of the rules of the game that they're playing. And they're so disconnected that a really practical question can really unsettle them and almost haunt them. And I will just ask them, what do you want? And surprising how hard that one simple question can be when one hasn't really been connected to their energy metabolism, to their hunger, their desire, their curiosity for a long time. They actually don't know. And that becomes a really fun process, like that exploration of discovery back to kind of their own soul and their own desire and their own artistic inquiry.
I'm going to go back to your words of curiosity and exploration, because what they can do is they can arouse a dormant desire inside of us, that we have a desire, but it's been so long since we looked at it, or we even had permission to look at it or consider it, because it seems so often if we go for our desires, we're viewed that we're egocentric or self-centered, or that we're not considering the needs of other people and we're only considering our selfish needs. And I just did a show last week on self-care, and we just talked about, you know, Lindsay, if you don't take care of yourself, who will? And until you take care of yourself, you are truly not prepared to take care of anyone else. And if you are a false self, a self that is not representing you, but it is representing the culture and the milieu around you, then, you know, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have a hard time fulfilling and serving the needs of other people if you're always so needy, and yet for almost an unknown or a shameful need.
I think you're really onto something. There's a nuance, I think, to desire and need. And I think it matters where that source is coming from. There's an innocence to that burning ball of desire that we're born with. The innate curiosity we have. And, you know, culturally, if we just go back historically, if everyone had just sourced what everybody else is doing and then trying to learn the rules of that and going through the motions, there would be no innovative edge. There would be no next frontier. There would be no pioneers of any industry. And so I think curiosity is so essential to innovation and creativity and inspiration, and benefits all of us. And the distinction between neediness, whether a desire is coming from that innate burning desire or a misunderstood lack inside, like an emptiness. Eastern philosophy, they talk about the legend or the archetype of the hungry ghost, always seeking, never satisfied. And that reminds me of like desire sourced from desperation or need.
Well put. Desire sourced from separation from desperation or need. Yeah. Rather than from this created desire for your unique self that I find is really important. You know, one of the things I was thinking about as we get, you know, we're talking high level here, and I wanted to get a bit practical at points. I think I mentioned that I just, you know, that I find you a brilliant business coach, life coach, and unique insights and perspectives. And so you have some very, maybe, well, I would call them unique ideas about what your coaching life is all about. Whether they're unique or not, they're Lindsay Davis ideas. You have learned from other people, but you have not necessarily co-opted other people's desires. You've incorporated them into what what is your personal life. That's my observation of you. So I'm curious, Lindsay, what does the role of desire play in your approach to your personal life and your career? How does your personal desire impact your life and your career?
Yeah, and I so appreciate that question. I think for me, it plays a role of an artistic medium, if I can put it that way. So even though I am a business coach, a life coach, a performance coach, I really come from an artist perspective. I live, sleep, breathe it, move it. And so I think of everything as a medium to express some deeper fulfillment or explore a next freedom, to really confidently honor that next self-expression. And I do it with myself. I definitely use those skills with my clients. But desire becomes almost like a path through the woods. You know, you can travel that well-worn trail, like a huge trail that everybody's hiking. And, you know, we used to live in the city, and getting out in nature whenever you can is great. But you're just sort of walking in a line of people on a well-trodden path. And that's nice at some level. But desire for me in the artistic or professional realm, how I live it now, is finding those pathways through the woods, almost like a narrow game trail or a place where there is no path. And you really have to rely on your inner curiosity, the sparks of interest, the places that have you take a second glance. And as you weave those together and really follow that path, at the time, it kind of looks like connect the dots. You know, you don't really know. It does this make sense? I don't know. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. But if you can hold and have a level of self-trust and alignment with your values and what's meaningful to you, you get to have these moments where you look back and the dots are connected, and that path through the woods has brought you one kind of pinch me experience at a time, and you've lived a lot of life in between those. And to me, there's so much freedom and joy and interest in that kind of way of doing business, that kind of way of self-expression, and just infusing a little more life into these years we have on Earth.
And on that journey you were talking about down that path, part of it calls for a really difficult thing for us because we are so filled with thoughts. You know, the monkey mind has so many thoughts going on as we're walking, even in nature. You know, we've got, our mind is typically not even in the nature that we're seeing. We're thinking and doing other things. And it calls for, in order to have successfully accessed that, it calls for an acute paying attention. And it's a paying attention to what absolutely is around you. And then intuiting your need from that. But I think if we don't pay attention, we're never going to get it. That we've got to give ourselves permission. It's paying attention and permission. Giving ourselves permission to listen to those voices that resonate with wherever we are right now, that we're not two steps ahead, we are right exactly where we are right now. And that is so difficult. That is just so doggone difficult.
It's kind of that curious paradox, or like a tension between two realities. Humans, we're so funny because we're either like three steps ahead into our future and whatever we imagine that to be next, or we're way back rehearsing our past and whatever experiences that means to us. And we're in this monkey mind, this head, bouncing back and forth. And there's relative peace when we find ourselves present and awake, and we can feel our future, plan, and have intentionality about where we're going, we can acknowledge our past and honor our experiences, but we're also really oriented in our present-centered being and how we're showing up and what we're up to right then. There's a really practical way, because I know this is a little conceptual, so there's a really practical way of practicing this, because when I'm working with clients, they know I'm big on practice. What we rehearse, we become. When somebody is saying, well, how can I be aware, more aware, and how can I be more focused? Those are two mental skills. And so when somebody's practicing, let's just say meditation, if they set their timer, let's say for 5 minutes, and they just open their awareness to notice all of the thoughts, to notice the sounds, to notice, you know, the feeling of the light on their eyelids, to notice how their body is feeling, if it's feeling tight or whatever. They're practicing wider, expansive environmental awareness. They can also bring that awareness to their inner experiences. But they can also use another meditation technique, which is focus. They can do it really simply. I mean, just, again, set the timer for 5 minutes. I'm not going to lie. This can be really boring and excruciating. But if somebody's willing to do it, they're training focus. If they can just count their breath for those 5 minutes, and good luck with that. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, I do out. The 10 and then repeat rather than try to go to.
Yep.
I do 10 and then sometimes 5, but or 6, you know, because they're even numbers. And I do 10, you know, 1, counting 1 is a breath in, 2 is a breath out. And I count 10 and then just start over again. So I'm doing my counting when I do that. You know what I've noticed?
Yeah, and I find that that's helpful for people to know. Those are two ways to train awareness, inner and outer, and focus, so that they can start to hold that paradox or tension more gracefully in their life. You know, so much of the time, speaking of rules, we're used to, you know, meditation being taught as it's like good to do, and there's a million ways to do it. But I find that it's really helpful for people to understand the context of maybe what this is helping them develop more of in their life.
Oh, and there's such high expectations. I've tried to lead people to meditation, and they say, well, I just can't get there. My mind is too busy, and I'm all over the place. And I said, well, join the crowd. I've been meditating for 4 years now, and I still, that's the thing that I wrestle with. But the one thing that is noted in my instructor is that to not concentrate on the thought, but just name it thought, and say, okay, now you're dismissed, you're not needed. And then I have my moments of quiet meditation, and then another thought will come up, and I note it. He calls it noting it. And I note just the concept thought. That is thought, and I need to just kind of pass that on by, allow myself to think of it later. But nonetheless, even when I have that, Lindsay, I have to say, just as an aside, I do 20 minutes. And just the fact that I am quiet, I am not moving, my brain is going from inner peace to noisiness, but just that process, just by itself, of that 20 minutes of quiet and of not moving, of not, you know, not walking around, not thinking of anything, not listening to music, but just listening to my own mind, has become essential in my life. It's become very, very helpful. And other people say, well, that's a distraction. And my response is, what isn't? Life is a compilation of distractions.
Yeah, chosen distraction or default, you know. But, you know, one thing I noticed about you in every conversation we've had is you have a level of awareness and relaxed graciousness in your state of being. And so, you know, it does speak to those 20 minutes And it does speak to those years of meditation. And that's what I've really found, too. I mean, it's not just that we do our time and practice and then we go about our life. It starts to influence how we show up and the person that we become, almost like we're able to reconnect with those meditative moments and live closer to that state of centered presence over time. And it may take a little bit of practice in time, but it does influence you. It's inevitable.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you. And I think one thing that does happen is there is a graciousness to the second half of life. You know, as you grow older and you grow out of the, you know, the immediate overpowering ego needs, and your needs become more spatial, energetic, spiritual, if I may. You know, your energies are there, and hopefully what we can attain in older life. But we are all, I like to look at it as we are soil. We are not so much the plants. We are the plants, but we're the soil, and we prepare the soil. And even though we can have very rich and mulchy soil, it nevertheless needs nutrients. And we're always planting or adding nutrients to that soul. And that's what meditation is about. That's what prayer is about. That's what self-care is about. And taking care of ourselves. It's all about providing nutrients so our souls can grow, our inner selves, our inner desires, our, as my friend Terry says, our comfort in our own skin. That lies a lot in nutrition of our soul, of our soil, of the soil that we are planted in. I'm going to come back to that in a bit. What I'd like to do right now is take a quick break, and then I'm going to take us on a little journey.
Sounds good.
Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I have my very special guest, Lindsay Davis, who is, I think, one of my brightest friends. I love to speak to bright people, and she is so insightful. I kind of want to go into taking a look at how does desire, Lindsay, and how does my personal desire. And we will, by the end, we will talk about the dark side of desire. I'm not going to pretend that desire is all pure and beautiful, that there is a shadow side to desire. But before I get there, I'm thinking about life goals and purpose in life. And life goals and purpose in life are a big deal. You know, we don't know each other well enough, but, you know, this is a big deal in my life. I have, you know, I wrote a book, Getting the Right Things Right, Reinventing a Life That You Want, and it had about life goals and passions and desires, and I'm a strong advocate about purposeful life planning, and I believe that if we aren't intentional about our lives will be intentional about us, and we can easily fall into a rut and find ourselves being controlled by circumstance and not intention. So here's my question for you based on that. Let's say, Lindsay Davis, you are beginning a new chapter in your life. Now, I'm not thinking that you're going to do a total change, you're going to quit being a coach, but that you're just going through a period of refocusing. And, you know, you want to refocus your approach with your clients, your approach with yourself, with your daughter, with your husband. Each day in this new chapter, you have choices that you bring to what I'm calling the starting gate. I think we had talked about that before. There's a starting gate each day, and there's a starting gate to each new chapter. You can always allow some obligation or some external pressure to guide you into that chapter. But what if you were willing to choose desire to accompany you to that starting gate instead of obligation? because obligation so frequently comes to the starting gate. Do you have experience of obligation that has led you to your starting gate rather than the Lindsay Davis desire?
You know, I have a mixed relationship with the word obligation. As a former, definitely people pleaser, and, you know, I work a lot with the good ones of society who are so good at performing to standard. But I like what you were saying around, you know, if we aren't intentional and deliberate about how we choose to show up in our life and what we're about, other people will do that for us. And so, you know, you get to choose either way. As far as obligation versus intrinsic, that's, I look at it as external. You can be externally motivated by other people or external circumstances, but I find a much more powerful way of being in life is intrinsically motivated or intrinsically driven, and that's really done by passion and curiosity and a sense of purpose. And so if I'm in a period, and this comes up so much with clients, so I can make this really practical, Charlie, for listeners. If I'm in a period of reinvention, and maybe not full overhaul transformation, but mini transformation, I look at it as a realignment. And so the first step for me is to spend a little bit of time revisiting or reclarifying what's most important to me. What are the values or the traits that I want to be about or I want more of in my life or I would like to express more? And I look at them as adding another color or a texture to our piece of art, which is the masterpiece of our life. And so initially, I'll find a little bit of time and tuck it into a week or so to really marinate in what's important to me and how can I better align myself in living out those values. Then on a daily basis, like what you were saying around the starting gate, there's a really easy way of starting an intentional morning. And morning rituals get really complex. Everybody has, you know, kind of their way that they see they want to do it. But for me, it can be just as simple as waking up, taking a deep breath in and welcoming myself into my day, and then choosing what do I want to be about today? And just choose one word. I'd like to bring a kindness to today. And then allow myself to embody that through the day, to walk with kindness, to speak with kindness, to infuse it in how I am with myself, and how I am with my work and anybody I meet. So we have this way of practicing these values and choice points in the starting gate, and then eventually they kind of work on us, and we end up becoming that more, inviting more opportunities that allow us to express those traits more. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yes. It answered my question and gave me a couple more. Now, that assumes kindness is one of your internal desires.
It is at times. Yeah, I mean, of course, it's always a value that I hold, but it just depends on what I'm cultivating more at certain periods of time.
Yes, and I see that kindness, it seems essential, that is integrated into, because I do agree that we have obligations, and we, just because we're thinking of ourselves, we can't ignore obligations. But that kindness becomes integrated in the obligation. And then that obligation becomes truly an experience of our desire, that we are shown, that we are able to reveal our kindness and to express our kindness. So we're expressing an inner desire, but in such a way, sometimes in an obligatory fashion or others, but it's serving other people. It is not just about me. When I get a hold of myself and when I understand my desires, then I am really capable of working with others so much stronger than I could be if I was only focused on them, because I would, using your word, I would no longer have the energy to proceed.
Yeah, and you know, we can only see somebody and meet them as clearly as we're willing to be with ourselves and our own stuff. And you know, to tag back to the word obligation, the one that I like to use more, even with things that we do need to, that are important to show up, to have a consistency or a grittiness or a dependability about us, I look at them as commitments, so that I'm always shifting the responsibility and the choice point back to myself, or if I'm working with a client, back to them. There can be this almost passivity of, well, I have to do this, and I guess I should do this, or I ought to. And if we listen to the energy of when somebody's saying should or have to, it's actually really young. It reminds me of being a child and being like, ugh, I have to clean my room, or else. If we wake up to this reality that we are adults, and we get to be as selfish as we choose to be, and all of the consequences of that. We also can be as giving as we want to be. But to look at it as, what are you a living commitment to today? And when I see something on my calendar and I say, I'm committed to showing up because this is important for me to do because, it shifts that back to autonomy or self-ownership. And I find that frees that channel up in the inside again to access passion and what's the attitude I want to bring to this, and the effort or the healthy rigor, so that I'm not, you know, dragging my feet and really draining the energy.
Yeah, see, once again, here you go with insights and perspective, in that a commitment is an internalized obligation, and where it is, obligation is external, something I have to do, something I hate to do. A commitment is something I've made a choice on, that I have to do it, and maybe it not be the grandest thing that I look forward to do, but I'm committed to do it because I have the capacity, I have the desire to serve, I have the desire to do good for other people. And so that obligation is getting filled by choice, not by some external pressure of people or peers or, God forbid, religions, you know, which are pretty obligatory. I just like the idea of commitment over obligation. Obligation seems so down and so oppressive. And commitment seems enlightening or refreshing. I like that distinction.
Yeah, well said. You reframed that so well. And, you know, just to dial up that flame just a little bit, Charlie, you can even go one step further. So you can say obligation, you can source it as commitment, but if you really want to play your edge, you can bring devotion. And so looking at those things on your calendar, or ways that you have, you know, activities that are a commitment for you, this is I'm devoted to doing this today because. And then we're even, you know, turning up that flame back into, we're not looking for the activity to bring passion and inspiration to us. We are bringing the energy of inspiration or passion to the activity, regardless.
Yeah, I like the devotion. You keep, you know, you're going layers deeper. I like that devotion really well, because we begin with obligation and move to commitment, and then devotion. For me, just that word connotes a purity of thought and a purity of desire and a purity of intention, that I am devoted to doing good things with my good things.
Mm.
I like that.
Beautifully said.
You know, I want to switch tracks, and I want to go a bit from, because we've talked about desire, taking care of self, what's important to me, which can lead to obvious questions. Are these two talking about narcissism and I'm all that's important? And I doubt that people have gotten that, but I want to be careful, because there really is a shadow side of desire, is there not?
Oh, yeah, and I'm glad we're touching on this. But hopefully people have understood. Up until this point, we have not touched on the shadow side of desire, but happy to go there now with you.
How would you describe the shadow side?
I think the word obsession comes to mind when I think of the shadow side of desire. And, you know, in a healthy desire, like a healthy appetite, there is a pain and a pleasure. But I think obsession is the suffering, which is very different than pain or pleasure. There's a desperation to it, and almost an addictive quality that comes from a lot of fear and emptiness.
Boy, you touched on what I was thinking as well. And, you know, we look at the obsessive side of desire, which is, you know, one notable example is addictions, our addictions. Mm-hmm. But I am prepared to suggest that even addictions and obsessions begin with a pure desire that are later corrupted and become obsessions. And I'm thinking, I just noted three examples of addictions, mm-hmm. alcohol, food, and sex, probably our largest addictions that we have, but all are pure and natural. I mean, a drink to cut the edge of the day there is nothing wrong with that. Food, I mean, how do you live without food? And sex is one of the most normal of all human activities, and that is expected. And yet, each one of those, too much of it becomes an obsession, becomes an addiction, and it then becomes a numbing of the dissatisfied or the unfulfilled self, and we just numb ourselves so we don't have to feel anything. But those pure desires can also backfire and work against us. Like, mm-hmm. I just read of an athlete today that got 14 years for rape, and they listed all the things he did. And, you know, the guy, you know, I'm certainly not condoning what he did, but he's obviously a sick human being. There are things that are going on him that are an acute sickness that I don't think prison is going to fix. I think that some sort of mediation would do a better job. Does it make sense that our addictions begin with pure and natural human desire?
It does. I follow what you're saying. Can I ask you a question?
Please do.
Yeah. What do you think creates the corruption, as you said? What takes it from normal desire into corrupted addiction or obsession?
Yeah. It's maybe twofold. One is a deep-seated shame or disgust with yourself or insecurity with yourself, all of these negative connotations that come from what I call the small self that is very fearful. And you can take, if one drink of alcohol feels good, two drinks feel better, well, a bottle must really be able to take care of it. And we are no longer just sort of helping ourselves, we are numbing ourselves. The same thing with food, same thing obviously with sex, is that, you know, once you've had so much, you can't get enough. And last week we talked about this on the show, and I use ice cream as an example, and that I definitely could be an ice cream addict. I could eat ice cream every day. But I eat ice cream about once every 2 weeks. But when I eat ice cream, Lindsay, I don't go out and buy the tiniest little things where I have a couple bites. I buy a pint of Ben and Jerry's with full intention of eating every bit of it. I'm not going to eat a half a pint. I'm going to eat every bit of it, but it's once every 2 or 3 weeks. And so, you know, that's not obsessive. That is just, that's indulging. We had talked about on the phone earlier, we had talked about indulging. And I think indulging is a good thing as long as it doesn't become obsession. So that's sort of my definition. Yeah. Is that helpful?
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, it's like almost what I was hearing in there too, which has been my experience, is indulgence is a little bit different than obsession. Obsession and addiction and the shadow side of desire, one is not free. One does not feel free. And there's like shackles to that obsession or addiction. And many times they do need help really moving beyond that. And, you know, in my work, I don't work a lot necessarily with alcohol, food, or sex addiction, but I see this also with the dream. Almost being so addicted to the dream, obsessed with that kind of castle in the sky vision, when in reality, there, you know, I'll be working with a client who is not free, doesn't feel free in their life. So this might be somebody who can't let go of always working in their business or designing the perfect artistic expression next, but unaware, not necessarily seeing that in the mundane human everyday world, they are abdicating their responsibilities as far as even just taking care of their bodies, paying their bills, showing up for family. It's almost like they've gone numb to what's going on in their present day reality because they are so addicted to succeeding at the dream, if that makes sense.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Because the idea of the succeeding of the dream is an obsession, is it not? And it's like, if only...
It is, and it comes from healthy desire. It starts there.
Yes.
But it goes too far.
Yes, and that I think that's important to note, that the desire itself is not unhealthy, but the abuse, we abuse or corrupt the desire. I think it's going to satisfy all of our needs when we get there, and every time... And I mean, every time we get there, we find we have not arrived. We never arrive.
You know, I think there's a misunderstanding. I'm glad you said, you know, that there is this healthy desire in this. Because I think there's a misunderstanding being taught, and it's taught in a lot of conscious communities, spiritual communities, creative communities. And I've seen it where, because they'll see this shadow side of desire, with like a dream or success or money or a certain reputation, they'll see the shadow side and make it mean that the desire itself is wrong. And so they're kind of going for being free of all desire, and maybe I shouldn't, it's wrong to want to make money. It's wrong to seek success in my career. It's wrong desire to be regarded or respected in my field. The desire itself is clean. And they're also then free to be at peace with the process of discovering that, or the journey of becoming or seeking those things, but without the obsession, without the addiction, so that they're also awake to be joyful now, to find a sense of pleasure and fulfillment now, and bring that to this healthy hunger, if that makes sense.
Oh yes, and I think simply awareness of that and caution our desires could lead to obsession, addiction, or just an overdoing of our desire sort of really compromises the beauty of a desire. So let's kind of wrap up our time here and say we're both advocates that desire, we are driven by desire. Let's admit that. Let's accept that. And let's try to appropriate that as much as we can, because one of the downsides, you know, you had mentioned to me on the phone, and it's hard to describe on air without drawing it out, but a bell curve. And on one side mm-hmm. was aversion of desire because, you know, we're afraid of where it's going to take us. Is it going to take us to the lust of the flesh, of the eyes, and all of these sorts of lusts, or whatever? It's going to take us astray. The top of the bell curve is just pure desire, just this pure, unadulterated, literally unadulterated desire. And on the bottom half of the other side is obsession. And so we have to be careful of those low sides, either aversion to desire or obsession as a result of desire, and focus on the top of that bell curve and to live in the purity of desire. And at the same time, building ourself, our confidence, our well-being, our ability to serve, and then going out and serving other people with that same passion with which we have developed.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you brought in this bell curve. It's one of my favorites to use with clients. Because it's interesting, if you notice the energy of the shape of the bell curve, and how we can really sense into this in our everyday life, aversion versus obsession versus that pure openness in the middle is on either side of the extreme, the energy gets tight and constricted, graspy, closed, and trapped. And in the middle, the energy is really open and free and clean to express.
You know what, Lindsay? You know what I think? I've never said this on a podcast, but I think there's a book in here for us.
I love it.
I don't think this is explored. I really don't think desire and the beauty of desire and the health of desire is explored to the degree that we've been able to talk to it about it today. Lindsay Davis, thank you for spending time with me today.
Oh, it was such a pleasure. I'm always so happy to speak with you, Charlie. It's good to be here.
I know. Kindred spirits. Tell our listeners, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, I think the best way, especially if they're interested in this topic and the process of cultivating more curiosity, passion, purpose about what they're up to, is to go to the Path to Possibility Journal, allonewordjournal.com. And from there, I mean, they can obviously have a link to the Path to Possibility Journal, which is the process of exploring internal, intrinsic desire born of curiosity and opportunity. But they also there have access to any bonus resources there, and they can get in touch with me. I'm always happy to connect with listeners if they have any questions that was stirred up from something we discussed today. So we can put that in the notes, if you will.
Is your book for sale now?
It is.
Oh, well, let's make sure, send me the links on that, okay? So I can get
I can get that in
the show notes, because I've reviewed the book and it is excellent. It's really well done for getting in touch with your inner self and who you are and how you can express yourself in life. And what your passions are. I love it, and I will put that in the show notes. Lindsay, again, thank you.
I so appreciate that.
And I'll do what I can to push your materials. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to the next chapter with Charlie. And as always, please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.